It's Sal Capaccio.
Filling up right behind the Bills bench right now with their flags and their hey, 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 hey.
Hey, hey,
hey, hey. Let's go Buffalo chant.
On WGR Sports Radio 550.
Something you want to mention or shall it wait?
You know this hat thing that's going on, the hat bracket that's happening here. I think Josh Schmidt, producer of Morning Show, like started this thing. So we're having listeners vote on, or followers on social media vote on our favorite hats. And one of my hats that's entered, it's white, and I wear it golfing, and it just gets my hands, like it gets really dirty. And so I just ordered a little hat rack for the dishwasher. That's a way to safely wash a baseball cap. Is you put it in it's got a form fitting bottom, and then it closes over the top, and it protects the hat from being damaged in the dishwasher. And you got to make sure you don't use detergents that are too heavy. I don't know. I got to do a little more research.
Not hat friendly.
Yeah. Right. And so I completed during the break, I did this, right? Big box store. And the final confirmation comes up and it just said, it's time to get excited. Your order's on the way.
Oh, no kidding.
Like, I ordered a rack to wash a baseball cap in a dishwasher. I mean, I'm going to be glad to have, I hope it
Here
works.
Here we go.
I hope it works. But like, it's time to get excited. Your order's on the way.
Everything's the worst. Sal Capaccio on the Western Hotline. Sal, do you wash your hats?
Oh, you know what? It's really funny you say that. I really don't. I don't wear caps very often. But apparently Yana just bought something, and I don't know what this looks like. She just told me. Max has a cap that he's been wearing at baseball for a while, and it's dirty. And she said, oh, I just bought something to wash caps with. Like, apparently you put the cap inside something and wash it.
In the dishwasher.
The same thing, she bought something recently that we put our sneakers in. And instead of putting the sneakers just in the washer, you put them in this bag and it closes up. And it's just got these, like, I don't know what you call them, like fluffy things on it. And it washes the sneakers without making them super wet inside. Really cool.
Washing machine, though, that sounds normal.
Right.
Dishwasher.
Yeah.
This is what I was tipped off about this because I might have said something about this white hat getting dirty, and I don't want to just buy a new one. But I'm a little.
It makes sense that you'd want to wash them.
Yeah. And I've scrubbed it. I've used like dish detergent and a scrub brush and I've gotten decent results, but it's really tedious.
Yeah.
And I said, all right, well, somebody told me about this hat rack dishwasher idea, so I'm going to take it for a spin. Okay. And if it destroys my hat, you'll hear all about it.
You're going to take it for a spin cycle.
Yeah.
Got it. All right, Sal. So we've got injury news today. Been waiting forever. Trey White not practicing, groin injury. So we have some clarity, I suppose, on his status.
Yeah, that's right. It is officially a groin injury for Tre'Davious White. Also a groin injury for Christian Benford. So they're both listed with groin injuries. The difference is Tre'Davious White did not practice today. Christian Benford did practice on a limited basis. And then we had Keon Coleman show up on the practice report with a groin injury. I will say, though, guys, I was out there all day. I mean, Keon Coleman practiced. I saw him afterwards in the field house walking around. So, I mean, hopefully, it was just something that they wanted to back off him today. All right. So tomorrow would be the key day to look there. But tomorrow's also the key day for Tre'Davious White. Sean McDermott did not rule him out for the game on Sunday night. But tomorrow's the big day. If he doesn't practice tomorrow, I think that's not a good sign, obviously, for his availability. If he does practice in some capacity tomorrow, we'll still be wondering, what his status is.
Is there how much reading between the lines are you comfortable doing about how he sounds about these people, right, to varying degrees? Like, I felt like maybe Benford, they were just being really careful, and mm-hmm. he did do more, he did something today, but I'm a little freaked out that he's even at a limited stage, and of course, Tre'Davious White not there at all. I mean, I don't know, Sal. They could get pretty thin against a team that you don't want to be thin against.
No doubt, but I agree with you that it sounded like more like, hey, I mean, I was out there today and Benford seemed like, to me, it wasn't, I don't know what he's not doing,
mm-hmm,
in the
mm-hmm.
reps once we leave, but I mean, I have video of him and he's moving around and he's doing, pre-practice drills and positional drills. So I think that to me is a good sign. So I wouldn't worry too much about that right now, but sure enough, if it's, we get later in the week and he's still there, we'll find out Friday. Sean will do his first radio interview with me on the Extra Point Show Friday that he does every week and does a injury report right there. That being said, I think it's trending well for Khalil Shakir. He was a full participant, mm-hmm. so obviously that's the case. As I said, Keon Coleman's on the report, but kind of saw him there, and you know, even after practice, so that didn't seem like anything necessarily. Tyler Bass still dealing with the left hip and groin, the pelvic area. That's still a little concerning, but they haven't signed a kicker. And then we know Dwayne Carter's not going to play. He is on the injury report because he is still an active player, which we can talk about all those, you know, roster technicalities in a minute if you want. But Tre'Davious White's the one that I would be most concerned about, obviously. He's the only one in this entire list who did not practice today that, you know, other than Dwayne Carter, who we know is out.
Right. And this goes back almost 2 weeks now before the trip to Tampa. Yep. Was the Trey White practice injury, didn't know what he was dealing with. We knew that they didn't put him on IR or anything, which seemed like a, you know, at least a somewhat of a good sign. It's the same question, Sal, like what do the Bills do without him if they don't have him back? And, you know, if you haven't said so, what would be your, I don't know, I don't want to say guess, but it's a groin, it's 2 weeks, he didn't go to IR. I guess we don't, really don't know, it's probably not even worth guessing it whether he'll make it for Sunday.
Well, first of all, let's just say because he didn't go on IR, I think that's a sign of confidence that he'll be back at some point in the next few weeks. That might not do anything for Sunday, but mm-hmm. at least we know that it's not anything super long term, which is good news. When it comes to Sunday, I think you could do it a couple different ways here, guys. Really, I think there's three options. You have Jamarcus Ingram, who's been in the system for 4 years now. You have Dorian Strong, who they drafted as a rookie. Christian Benford started as a sixth-round rookie mm-hmm. the first year. And you have Dane Jackson, who you could elevate from the practice squad to start. You could also elevate Dane as an insurance and still start one of the other guys. And I do think it's a very interesting call if you want to go with either Ingram or Strong, because they could very well feel one is better than the other and just say, we're putting him there. They could also say, look, we need Jamarcus Ingram to be able to play different roles for us. He plays inside and outside, dime safety. He could do a lot of things that we kind of need to, if we need him for that, we got to have him available. He's got to work there and learn that all week. Whereas Dorian Strong, you give him one thing to work on all week, right? He's a rookie, outside corner. This is your guy. This is where you line up. Go do it. I wouldn't be surprised if that's the case either.
What is Strong's... Like, what's his game?
Strong suit?
Like, yeah, sorry. I was walking into that and trying to duck it.
Hey.
But, like, what's his game? I mean, he came up, you know, through the spring and into the summer now and then, and it was interesting. I'm trying to remember who. I think it was maybe Matt Perino a couple weeks ago I talked to on a day Mike was away and said, like, I'm one of the few in Bills, you know, on the beat here that hasn't really seen it from Dorian Strong. I think it was Matt that said that. So, but mostly it's been positive reviews. Like, what's his game, Sal? Like, what is he, if he plays, what are his best features and what are his weaknesses?
It's going to sound funny because you just said it, but it's true. He's strong. He's physical. It's what he is. I mean, it's funny. Jamarcus Ingram actually said that to us today, too, by the way. You guys have it. Maybe Zach can play the clip later, because I asked Jamarcus Ingram, what have you seen from Dorian Strong? And he said, his name's Strong and he is strong. That's what he said. And he's physical. He's a physical player. He's, you know, if you could draw a picture of what an NFL corner should look like, or, you know, figure it in your mind, and this is the guy. I mean, guys, he's a little taller. He's not super tall. He's long. And he's well built, right? I mean, like, he's a little bit on the thinner side, but, like, he's well built. And by the way, background on that is his dad is a professional bodybuilder and professional weightlifter. So, like, yeah. He knows his way around a weight room, right? He knows what this is all about. And being ready to, you know, go play in an NFL game and being physical and able to handle that part of it. So I think that's the big part of his game. You know, when he started out at camp, I really liked him the first few days, and then I didn't really notice him that much after that. But it wasn't because he wasn't doing anything special, but also that's a good thing, right? Because you're not noticing that he's getting beaten all the time. So I think from that standpoint, when you can have a rookie come into this roster and he goes a whole camp and you're not talking about bad plays that he's making or being out of position, that's a really good thing. I don't need to see all the wild plays. You'd love to see that. But I think that speaks volumes to what they might feel about him and his ability to maybe at least step in and play a role that they could be comfortable with.
Yeah, you know, of course they can be wrong about this stuff just like anyone can, but I wonder if they're not feeling the need to go out and get someone, Rasul Douglas, who I know has signed, Stephon Gilmore, whatever, someone, a name that you would recognize, you're like, okay, well, at least we got a veteran there, might be an indication that they think this kid, if he has to do it, can do it.
I would say that's probably correct. You know, no doubt they could do it that way and they could think that, and I wouldn't doubt it. Getting somebody like Rasul Douglas, obviously he knows the system. You go out and get somebody who also doesn't know the system, that's a little different. That's a little more time. This kid's been here since the draft, rookie mini camp, OTAs, mini camp, training camp, all of that. And let's remember, they do have Dane Jackson on the practice squad who they signed. And they have Max Harrison who's coming back in another 3 weeks, hopefully, right? So I think a lot of that has to go into it because you have to play the long game. You go out and get someone like that, you got to think about what that means, you know, over the next 5-6 weeks as well for that player in your team.
You'd have to think if White can't go Sunday, Jackson gets elevated regardless of whether he's the presumed starter or not, right?
To me, I do. I do think that because, like, the way I look at it, I know, like, Cam Lewis, I think, on the official roster is listed as a safety, but he's their backup nickel, right? Like, he's not going to be – he's not an outside corner. We know that. So Cam Lewis isn't an outside corner. You got Taron Johnson and Cam Lewis there. Christian Benford's an outside corner. Jamarcus and Dorian, that's three. You probably want to have one extra guy on top of the fact that you could have a guy that could play special teams, whether that if you do elevate him, that could be him or that could be one of the other guys because you have him kind of on the ready to be able to be, you know, your extra guy. Jordan Hancock, by the way, did practice today. He's not on the injury report, which means he practiced in full. So that's really good. And to me, you know, Jordan Hancock solidifies that safety part of it, too, when you talk about all of this.
If you're just quickly, if your name were Strong, you'd have to be Strong. I mean, think, and then you got the dad's a bodybuilder, like you just, the pressure. You would have, you know, you'd have to be a strong guy if you had the last name Strong. I don't think you could.
You got to be strong, and you got to look strong too.
Everything.
You can't be a little slot. No dad bod.
It sets the tone for your life. I think it sets the tone for your life if your last name were Strong. Sal Capaccio on the West Her Hotline. One more, at least on the secondary here. You put it all together. How about this matchup for this situation? Like, if they are down a guy, and then their depth is being challenged and questioned, are the Ravens a team where you might say? I mean, they're so good, but are they a team where you might say, like, it's not the worst matchup because of Henry, because of Jackson, you know, that maybe it's still only one tight end, but middle of the field. Would you say anything like that?
I think it's a very tough matchup for the Bills against this team the way they play. Like, I know that the Chiefs have beaten the Bills in the playoffs, right? But the Bills have beaten them in the regular season. I think matchup-wise, like how each team wants to play, I think the Bills – matching up against the Chiefs, I've always felt a little better about that versus against the Ravens because of how they play. Now, I will say part of that is because the Bills have always been, as you guys know, in this regime especially, traditionally, a lighter, more athletic defense. That's how they want to operate. They play a lot of nickel defense. They have played base against the Ravens. But the difference is this year, what they did was they went out and they got bigger in the offseason. They went out and they drafted Deion Walker and TJ Sanders, who wasn't the biggest guy, but they bulked up on the interior. And Larry Ogunjobi, who's not around, we know that. Landon Jackson on the edge, and I don't even know if he gets a game day jersey here. Joey Bosa, obviously. Joey Bosa's a much bigger dude than people realize maybe because he's this pass rusher, but, like, you know, he's also, he can play the run. He can set the edge. And I just like that they've done that. Shaq Thompson is on this team. I think Shaq Thompson could figure into this game plan. Like, Shaq Thompson, the guy they kept on the 53, I believe he has a role on this team. I think that's going to be putting him on the field sometimes in base defense sets. We'll see if they use it this week. And if not, you do have Dorian Williams there. Last year, that's what the Bills did. So
in the playoffs, right? They mixed some of that in, three linebackers.
They did.
Right?
Yep, they did. And they did it. They've done it before. Remember, I think they did it in Baltimore. And even though they didn't have Milano Bernard or Taron Johnson, we know how that looked and worked out. So to answer your question, Mike, like, I still think it's a tough matchup because the Ravens are that type of team. But the Bills have kind of countered here a little bit with their personnel. And I would say with the Ravens' injuries, Isaiah Likely and Patrick Ricard, like, those are two really big parts of their running game, actually. And, like, I think that makes it a little different here.
Ricard for sure is huge. And he did not practice again today, nor did Likely. Sal, part of the dilemma with going heavier like that, using three linebackers like they did some against Baltimore last season, is it means you're taking Taron Johnson off the field, right? And he's one of your best defenders, so you don't want to do that. Is there any I'm trying to phrase this in a way that's not going to make me sound like turn Rasmus Ristolainen into a winger guy, but is there something to be done with Taron Johnson outside of playing? Like, if they want to go heavier, can they move him somewhere else and still keep him on the field? Like, can he play safety? Can he play boundary corner? No, probably, right?
Not really. I mean, I would say it this way, Bulldog. Would I put it past Taron Johnson to be able to do those things? No. If you said to Taron Johnson, go play safety, he's going to go do it. If you said go play boundary corner, he's going to do it. It's not what he's trained to do. There's just other guys who are better at it. There's guys that have been watching film all week. They're ready to go do that. They understand the markings on the field, the boundary type of things, their run fits. It's so different. I think for a guy like Taron, I'd say I think safety would fit more than corner because of run fits, because he's in the middle of the field.
Right.
He understands what he's looking at from tackle to tackle a lot more than versus being on the boundary. And it is tough. Listen, I've had this discussion with Bobby Babich. He's right there with you, which is, yeah, we know. That's tough for us to say, let's take Taron off the field. But unfortunately, that's just kind of the reality of what you have to do when you want to go base sometimes.
If you know, what is the significance of the reported Deion Dawkins restructuring? Is there something imminent from it?
Mm-hmm. No, I would say nothing imminent. Now, anything's always possible, right? If someone, they feel like, hey, there's a guy out there we really want, we could do that. I mean, we're at Wednesday in week one. It's probably not going to happen now. And even into next week. This is something that's pretty common around this time, guys, which is you need money to operate throughout the year because of injury replacement costs. What an injury replacement cost is exactly what it sounds like, which is a guy gets hurt, you got to sign somebody. That's money you didn't account for that now suddenly you have to pay for a player who wasn't on your roster previously. In the offseason, only the top 51 salaries count against the salary cap. Once they got to last week in the final 53, all 53 count, and they had to get under the cap. So they had to do this just to literally be cap compliant. Then they freed up some extra money because as the year goes on, you're going to start eating into that money because you have to sign guys because guys get hurt or someone, you know, hey, there's a guy out there that, you know, we just want to add to the roster or whatever, and now you have that ability. So I would say, no, nothing is imminent, and this is pretty much procedural from that point. But it gives them some room to operate.
Speaking of procedural, can you explain what's going on with the practice squad IR involving Gabe Davis and Jordan Poyer?
Yes. So, okay. I don't know if the NFL transaction wire is out yet. It might be. But when it comes out, you're going to see, people are going to report, fans are going to see, Jordan Poyer has been released from the practice squad. He will be literally re-signed within minutes after that. He has to be released in order to sign Gabe Davis to the practice squad. The reason it's Jordan Poyer is because it's got to be a veteran, because you're only allowed a certain number of veteran players on your practice squad. So by having both of them, they'd be over that number. So they say to Jordan, hey, you know, it's the old Ree Ferguson thing. Go wait out in the parking lot. He really doesn't have to wait in the parking lot, though. Hey, we're going to release you. We're going to bring Gabe on. Okay, so then you say, well, wait a minute. They still have to then, what are they going to do? Because they'll still have too many. Well, then Gabe will go on practice squad injured, so he won't count. He'll literally be like an inactive practice squad player, which frees that spot back up for Jordan Poyer to resign.
Okay.
Then from there, Gabe Davis will have to miss 4 weeks, and he cannot practice with the team during that four-week time, the four-game time. After four games, Gabe Davis can then start practicing again with the practice squad. Like any other player, they would have a certain amount of window to activate him either to the practice squad or put him on the 53.
Okay, this isn't really that surprising then. I mean, he had to wait all summer for an offer because he didn't pass his physical in Jacksonville, if I remember right, and then wasn't considered fully healthy. So this just seems like more of an indication that that is the case, and it'll be a while before we hear from him if we ever do.
Yeah, and one more thing on rosters here while we're at it. So Dwayne Carter has not yet been placed on injured reserve. Now, that could happen tonight, tomorrow, whatever. I would also say it might not happen at all this week. And the reason would be, if you're on the roster week one and you're a vested veteran, a guy that has four or more years, your salary is guaranteed for the year. So let's just say they put Dwayne Carter on IR and they sign Jordan Phillips, you know, up from the 53. Now, suddenly Sunday, Jordan Phillips' salary gets guaranteed for the year. Well, if you're already going to have seven inactive players, essentially, you might just want to roll into the season into week one with 52 guys and not worry about it until next week when you don't have to guarantee someone's salary, if that makes sense.
Okay. While we have you, hypothetically, Travis Hunter, I want to see Sal would say what Bulldog said. Travis Hunter has this insane rookie year. It's historic. Touchdown catches, interceptions. He's coming close to playing full-time on both sides. But there's a better offensive rookie and a better defensive rookie, say Genty or Abdul Carter. Doesn't matter who. Does Hunter in that scenario just not win an award? Like he won't win offensive or defensive rookie of the year because there's someone better? Would anybody ever sort of vote differently? Because come on, right? He's just made history. There's no place for him to win. The NFL might end up sort of jammed in that scenario because there's no actual rookie of the year, per se.
Okay, so there's, what, 50 voters, I think? I do not have a vote. I did not hear what Bulldog said on this. If I'm voting in that scenario, I'm not voting for Travis Hunter in either category. There are two separate awards. There's an offensive rookie of the year. Was he or was he not? No, he wasn't. Defensive rookie of the year. Was he or was he not? No, he wasn't. That's how I would vote.
You wouldn't vote for him first in either category. You vote maybe second or down the line. But
you're saying first. You're saying there's a guy better than him on offense and a guy better than him in defense, but he was awesome on both sides of the ball either way.
Yeah, right.
Would I vote for him first? No, I would not. I would vote for the person I thought would deserve it on each side of the ball.
I think we all would. How does it feel to do that, though? How would it feel to do that? Like, hey, these are the rules?
Totally righteous.
I would have no issue with it. I mean, you know, that's, hey, if he devoted everything to offense, maybe he would have won the award, but that's not how his team decided to play him, right? So I wouldn't care. I mean, I it's kind of similar to me. Like, there's probably guys that could win MVP at quarterback, but their team doesn't play a certain style or way, so they don't have the ability to win MVP, right? So, hey, that's just the way it goes. Saquon Barkley was an amazing, you know, what he did last year. Who's to say maybe teams, if they gave the same amount of volume to guys, I don't know. I'm just using examples here. So I wouldn't worry about it. I mean, that's just
okay.
Maybe I would be also thinking about, I would want to make sure I tell people, hey, I think this guy did awesome, but, you know, obviously I can't vote for him. And, you know, make sure he got his love in some way.
Joe Burrow had the best quarterback season last year of any quarterbacks and didn't win the award. Because it's not the best quarterback of the league award. It's the MVP award, and there's different criteria, and so that's
he should have been better at defense.
Kind of how it goes, right? He should have had some interceptions.
Yeah, this is not the Hunter scenario is not that far fetched, really. Like that is very possibly what will happen this year. All right, Sal, you're going to be out tonight.
Yeah, so hope everybody can come by and say hi. Matt Bove and I are going to be live at the BFLO store on Transit Road, Transit Town. That's going to be starting at 6:30. We're doing an Always Game Day in Buffalo podcast. Right after this, after I get off with you guys, I'm headed over there. I'll be there around 6 o'clock setting up for the podcast. We'll be there about 6:30. We're going to start. We usually go for about 45 minutes. We're going to hang out after for a little while. Say hi to people. So come on by. And if you can't make it, it will be live. It'll be on, you know, X on at Sal Sports on my YouTube page as well. People can comment. And also, while we're there, so everybody knows, if anybody's interested in the Buffalo Football Legends Cruise at all that I've been promoting with Thurman and Don Beebe and Steve Tasker and those guys, Nick Ryberg, who owns Sojourn Travel, will be with us tonight, and he will be there to answer any questions people have.
All right, very good. We'll talk again tomorrow, I guess.
All right. Thanks a lot, guys.
All right. Have a good time out there. Hope folks get out there and see Sal and Matt for a live taping of It's Always Game Day in Buffalo. Sal's appearance with us brought to you by New York's only outlet liquor. When you need to stock up, it's the place to buy a case. What's your outlet?
Your thoughts on Sunday night's game, 803-0550. Maybe the Bills will be down a couple of guys here. Maybe not. From Sal sounded pretty good on Coleman, even though he's on the list today as limited. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog here. This is WGR.
So you take those two perimeter players with their size on the outside, that changes anything that offense was capable of last year, just because you have more winners, whether they're matchup winners or whether they're just, hey, we're going to give you a chance winner. So those two guys, if they're really able to, one, take a step forward in Keon, and two, Palmer just solidify himself, that's a big elevation in your pass game.
We'll see. Dan Orlovsky joining One Bills Live earlier. 803-0550, the number here. Who has more to lose Sunday night? On one hand, the Bills are the home team. On the other, the Ravens have it, I think, a lot tougher throughout the season. If the Bills win Sunday, Jets, Dolphins, Saints, Patriots, Falcons, Panthers, they'll not look back. I mean, unless something goes sideways, they're not going to look back at Baltimore, at least until the middle of the season. Maybe it'll be Kansas City again or even someone else. But with that schedule, a win Sunday and you are off to the races, unless you get, you know, picked off in a pretty big upset, at least before week five.
Right.
Ravens at Buffalo, Cleveland, okay. Detroit on a Monday night at the Chiefs, Houston, Rams, Bears, at Miami, at Minnesota. I wouldn't want to go to Minnesota. At Cleveland, Jets, Bengals. Haven't gotten to the Bengals yet. They'll play them twice. Bengals, Steelers. Haven't gotten to the Bengals or the Steelers yet, and it's November 30th.
Wow.
Bengals, Steelers, Bengals, Patriots at Green Bay, at Pittsburgh.
I mean, it sounds like for the first month to month and a half, 4 to 6 weeks or so, the Bills have, I think, a much easier time crawling out of the hole that 0-1 is, which is barely a hole. But, you know, it's a team you want to have a leg up on if you can get it, obviously, so the stakes are very high. But they I think the Bills have less to lose because of that. I mean, they are the home team, but both teams are living the same existence. And to an extent, Baltimore's got a little bit of what we had with the Chiefs until they beat them in the regular season. And now we sort of, I don't want to say we take it for granted. I'm never going to take them beating a team of that caliber for granted. But, you know, we joke around. What did you say? Like, I can't wait till the Bills beat the Chiefs and feel nothing. One of your friends said that.
Yes.
Right?
Stuck with me.
It spoke to me.
I think it speaks.
It's loud. And I think a lot of fans, if they don't agree with it, they certainly can understand it and appreciate it. You know, you have to choose to push back on, oh, the regular season games don't matter. But you know, in theory, I agree with that. You know, I know it's not the ultimate goal, but the Ravens have that with the Bills, in the playoffs anyway. It's not the regular season. They've handled the Bills fine in the regular season. You know, they haven't always beat them, right? The Bills did win on a Poyer pick there a couple years ago. But I think Baltimore, I've alluded to it with a few of our guests already this week. I think I brought it up with Ross and I brought it up with Jeremy Kahn in the 4 o'clock hour today, that Baltimore seems to be really pouring. They've got vengeance on their minds here. And I don't know that that's the right headspace to be in starting a new season, right? They think some wrong was wrought upon them by losing. I mean, they kicked the ball around the field like a bunch of chumps, and they lost. That's how it goes. Take care of the ball, you win the game. So I don't want to hear, like, you deserve better. I mean, the turnovers matter, and that's what cost them the game. So button yourselves up. I don't know. It sounds a little misplaced to me that they're as, you know, oh, we got to go. Yeah, it's September, dudes. Like, take it easy. So I think they're building it up in a way that makes it feel like it'll mean more to them. Either way, like, if they win, they're going to be like, yeah, see, we told you we could do this. And I think if they lose, they've set themselves up to look like idiots because they're pouring a lot into it because of last year's playoff result.
If they are.
I've seen some comments. Jeremy Kahn said, when I asked him, that's out there with them. Mm-hmm. They're talking about it. So I that's enough for me. I believe it. You know, does it end up mattering? I don't know, but I think it feels bigger for their side than the Buffalo side to me.
Well, I don't remember the Ravens being plagued by turnovers last season. I could look at their rankings, but the Bills, a big talking point for the Bills last year going into week one was cutting back on turnovers. And was it why they lost to Kansas City in the playoffs? Not exactly, if at all. But it was sort of part of Allen's reputation as a player. And they did that in spades. They were first in the league in fewest turnovers, and they were third in the league in most takeaways. So they accomplished that. I should know what Baltimore's ranking was in these areas last year, but the turnovers got them beat in the playoffs, and for as well as they did defensively, they could not take the ball away. The Bills might have put it on the ground in that game. I'm not sure.
I think they did.
But they couldn't take it away. And it's so familiar to our lives where what do you really do about it? You know, you're talking about emotions. That can be one thing. What do you really do to address that kind of a pitfall from your past? You know, you basically end up playing, I think, more conservatively. It's not just picks, it's fumbles too. But it's a tough fix.
Yeah, you know,
there's a lot of luck in it. And I don't know exactly, maybe a blitz more on defense or something to try to get more plays. It's obviously stupidly generalized, but I mean, I don't know. I don't know what you do as a team to repair that. Last year in that game, you've got a Jackson fumble after a bad snap, and it's a sloppy play by him. Before that, you had a pick down the right sideline, where is it Rapp makes a great play on that ball, and there might have been a little miscommunication with, maybe Bateman on that play. That happened. And then you have the Andrews fumble. That's bad, you know, in the middle of the field as they're driving. And, of course, the drop at the end. So, mistakes. But the schedule, I mean, I gave you Baltimore's. I think if I'm them, or if I'm me talking about them there, if they lose the game here, you just gotta figure out how to get to the top of that division. You know, that's maybe the ones. It's kind of a little much to say the one seed's out of reach after one game, but the two schedules are so different.
Yeah, you're still gonna have to find a way to manage that. If Baltimore loses this game, they're gonna have to find a way to manage that schedule to the point where they can get to, like, you know, 6-2 or something. Still to, like, be live for the not just the division but the one seed. Like, I think they would still be live there, you know, depending obviously on what's going on around them, and they can't really control that beyond Sunday night and then when they play the Chiefs, presuming that those three teams are the three that are duking it out at the top. And I hate not being able to find someone to wedge in there, but I really don't think there is somebody else, you know, to take the place of one of these teams and knock somebody out of there. It's just been so many years in a row where the Chiefs, Ravens, and Bills are the three teams. The Bengals had a moment there, and we'll see if they can get enough right on defense to still be, you know, a problem for Baltimore. But, yeah, I mean, I think it's a tough – whoever loses, you know, you got a long season ahead of you, and there's a lot of football to be played, a lot of twists and turns and all of that, of course. But I just feel like Baltimore's poured more in.
They play the NFC North. I mean, those are going to be such good games. Maybe not. I'm probably stretching it to say that. I was going to say, even what Chicago was last year. No.
No, that wouldn't have been a tough game. No. No, they have to be a lot better for it to be a tough game.
But you could have three really strong teams on the NFC side and at least two on the AFC side. Maybe the Browns are bad. But that's four of your games. Same for the Bengals. Same for the Steelers. You play all four of those teams, whereas the Bills play the NFC South, and that's nice.
It is nice. I don't think Tampa and Atlanta are any picnic, but I also don't think they're the Lions or the Vikings.
I think it's the easiest NFC division to play.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not easier than the West.
Yeah.
That was last year.
Yeah, not as easy as it has been, I think. I feel like we all, maybe a lot of people out there note, I think Tampa's been good for a few years here. Like, they're not, like, just sort of a team that, when they show up here and give the Bills a hard time, fans will be like, what, Tampa's good? Yeah, they're good. They're not great, but they're good.
They're definitely not great.
No.
They've won that division 4 years in a row, which might come as a surprise. One of those years they did it with 8 wins.
Right.
Maybe last year, 10. So it's not like they've had great records. Sort of ironically, they're Super Bowl win was the last time they didn't win that division. Right. New Orleans did.
But there's no question the Bills have the easier side with their division and this NFC crossover division, like you just said, with the Ravens have, that whole division, they got to deal with that. That's much harder playing those four teams than playing the four the Bills are going to play and then mixing the division. And, you know, I also don't think Cleveland's going to do anything at all. But that's it. I think Pittsburgh and Cincinnati are those are games that'll be tough games. And I don't think either the Dolphin or New England games or the Jet games are near as tough.
I guess I should include that the Bills' one other NFC draw is Philadelphia. I just don't even really think about that game because it's so late. Like, that. Anywhere close to sort of envisioning that game after Christmas, but that's the defending champs. And the Ravens version of that game is the Rams at home. Both the AFC teams will always be at home for those games this year. And I mean, that's not on the same level. But Philadelphia is so late, just feels like so many things could have happened by then that if that game is this week, it wouldn't be, I know. But if Philadelphia were this week, you know, that'd be so hot. Like, we're talking about Baltimore's just as good, probably, but just talking about the Eagles all the time. Instead, week 17, who knows if it'll even matter?
Right.
that I didn't like the game being that late because of that point. I want that game to be important. Still, it could be more important being so late, but also not that important.
If it goes the way last year went, where the one seed isn't available and the Bills clinch by, you know, a week or two before Christmas, then you're looking at a scenario where that's not that juicy a game, probably.
Yeah.
There's still seedings or whatever, but the one seed is the thing. And I doubt going into that game, I mean, it'd be wonderful if they had that sewn up, but that seems to be, that would be asking a lot, I think. So the only scenario I think where that game really takes a hit is if the one seed is off the table, then at least from our end of it. We'll see, you know, Philadelphia, yep, what their stakes are too.
Eagles final three games this year, Washington, Buffalo, Washington. We couldn't have used a NFC championship rematch either before, right before Christmas. I mean, that would have been nice to fit into the middle of the schedule somewhere.
You'd think, yeah.
Man, who are the ad wizards? Commercials on Red Zone, flaws in the schedule, quote flaws. 803-0550 for your thoughts. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog here, WGR.
You want an update on the Red Zone ads?
I do. I thought you were going to say
what day is it,
hat
Mike?
Washer, but okay. I'll settle for this.
I am not surprisingly getting a lot of information about how to wash hats. I've already taken my step.
Guess what today is?
The device to put in the dishwasher, so I'm going to take that out for a spin and see how that goes.
I will say I have had one of those. A long time ago, I had the little plastic. Yeah. But I don't remember using it in a dishwasher.
Okay. That's what I'm going to do. So we'll see if it works.
You take out the rack then?
No, I think you just set it on, you know, you just set it on the top rack where you would put like cups and glasses, I think.
Yes.
Is what I would.
Plastic containers.
Right, sure. Tupperware, whatnot, et cetera.
Things of that nature.
So, you know, developing more on that developing situation when, your purchase is on the way. Hooray. Celebrate it Wednesday. The next Wednesday, I'm being told. Anyway.
Exciting news.
Yeah, no, I can't wait. Exciting news. I bought a gas cap key for the boat because this gas cap that has like two little divots in it, and you can't really turn it by hand. You need this key, and we lost the key. So, like, Jared had been using, like, a pair of pliers he had on the boat to get the boat cap. I ordered those. Same message. Like, congratulations on your purchase. The fun is just beginning. I'm like, it's a hunk of misshapen metal to get a gas cap off a boat. Oh, my God.
Anyway. There are so many things like that in life.
Anyway, this is courtesy of Richard Deitch of The Athletic. Update from the NFL. The plan on ads on Red Zone. Limited number of ads, of course, throughout the 7 hours of the show, double box ads, which means viewers will hear the audio of the ads, but the other box will still be showing Red Zone.
Like golf.
So, yeah. So it'll be like one of those deals, but you'll be hearing the audio of the ad. But still, it tempers it a little bit for me.
I said I hate it. I hate it on principle. I don't even like Red Zone. I don't like Red Zone in either direction. In one simple sense, it's too manic. I mean, I'm not watching a game. I'm watching a highlight show.
It stresses me out watching it. John Gale hates it when he's over watching Football Sundays. It's too much.
Plus, I mean, I don't know if I can get away with saying that because I'm on my laptop or phone or both anyway. And in that case, it's too late. I know if it's going to be a touchdown on Red Zone.
You're ahead of it.
I've already found out. Like, I'm ahead of it. Imagine on the radio how much far ahead of it you'd be. So in one direction, like, it just seems like we're all going insane that way. But on the other, like I said to you many times, I'm better at Red Zone than Red Zone.
Right.
Because I'm fast enough with the remote. If I see there's a touchdown in a game I'm not watching, I'll get there before Red Zone does. I'll flip to it and I won't miss it.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, I don't want to be doing that all day either.
You are in like a 1% category, I think, of people. Maybe 5. I'm never going to do that. I like the convenience of seeing everything that happens that way. I'm not following. I only have the one fantasy team. I'm barely paying any attention to that as it is.
And you just got it.
But it is the stress level. There's nothing should be stressful about it, but it just is. Sometimes the guy's talking and you can hear the announcers too, and like that audio is like that sort of stuff gives me stress. So I sort of grin and bear it sometimes. It's really if I don't like a game. If the game is lousy or it's two teams I don't care about, I'll end up at Red Zone. But it is stressful, like watching it. I know that going in, that it's going to annoy me. But
I can't I can't say that the guy, the host, Scott Hansen, doesn't do a good job, though. I mean, he's all over you.
Yep.
He's sweating at you, and he's coming at you. He's got, you know, big guys because it's classic NFL personality guy. He's coming at you hard. 7 hours, you know, the witching all. It's definitely on brand for the NFL, this guy, but he is good. Like he,
yes.
I feel like, who was the one other guy? Siciliano? He made constant mistakes. Like, nope, that's the 30. Nope, that's second down. Like, just nope, nope, nope.
Yep.
And it would frustrate me even more because, like, I'm sitting there going, you're wrong too often. This guy doesn't give me that.
Right.
You know I want it.
Right. You're ready to nitpick.
You know I want to hear those mistakes.
Right.
But he doesn't really make them.
Yeah, he is good at it. He does not aggravate me. It's more this the how quickly it's one thing to the next, to the next, to the next, and then when there's that dual audio, that sort of freaks me out. Yeah, so that's it. Like, but again, I will choose to watch it, even though I know it's going to aggravate me.
The other one quick thing about, that's funny. What a line. The other one quick thing about, like, being Red Zone at home and controlling it is you have to remember, or you could write it down and look, but I'm not going to do that. You have to remember which two channels are the games that are on locally and not go to those channels because they'll be blacked out on those Sunday ticket
right.
channels. You want, you know, to only go, you want 4 and 29 or whatever it is. Like, you got to remember which ones are blacked out, which one or two games are not going to be on that list. You know, but you do in 5 minutes.
Yep.
Or 10, maybe 10. You do remember. Then you have it. Week one. Oh.
What did I say earlier since we were talking about all these different games? Locally, we get the New York teams at 1 o'clock, right? Giants and Washington, Jets and Steelers, and then at 4:25, we're getting Packers-Lions. So that's our day in advance of Bills-Ravens.
If you, that'll, you know, that'll be great.
If you're not watching Red Zone because it stresses you out.
That'll be great.
Yep.
I mean, I think there are a couple other interesting options where you could debate whether another game, I don't know, the Browns, though. There are a couple other games we liked a little more, maybe.
Yep.
But Pittsburgh-Jets is interesting what happens there. It might be really boring, but it's an interesting game to find out about. 803-0550 for your calls. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog, back after the update here on WGR.